Hey, welcome back, y'all, to yet another episode of the Terry Summers Podcast. I'm loving every minute of this. This fits like a glove, I think, with who I am. So I hope you're enjoying your time. I hope that we can grow together as friends. And I think that you will come to know me, if you don't already, as someone who always wants to, one, understand as well as be understood, but particularly someone who wants to understand, learn. That's where the questioning and the questions come from, is this desire to understand. And then I'm also someone that wants to help. And those two things work in tandem together. They're also very individual. Sometimes they can get me into trouble that I just maybe overseek understanding or overseek being understood or overseek trying to help when it's not a place that I can or what have you. But in this instance today, I think in this episode, you will appreciate the fact that I am someone who wants to understand and someone who wants to help, because I have a feeling you're going to resonate in the very same way. I'm just a blessed chica that I have a host of really great friends and relationships. And these are people that I can call on for my life's questions, and people that are willing to share themselves with me, share their knowledge with me, share their experiences with me, and not just with me now, but also with you. And that is just super cool. My guest today, Carlotta Turman, she is someone that I can call on, and I have today, to help me better understand the long-standing challenges of racism in our country. Carlotta is my friend, and I love her, and still our skin is different colors. Her color is not like mine, mine is not like her, and in those differences of tone, of skin, comes differences in the experiences of living out our lives. I want so much to understand. And I want so much to help when it comes to racism in our country. So today, I've turned to my friend, Carlotta, for both of those. You're going to love her.
Okay, we are recording, and I have a really sweet friend with me. We were just giggling and laughing. I said to her, now, Carlotta, I don't know if I mentioned it, but did I tell you it's not recording our faces? And we're both a little tickled that it's not recording our faces. So, but I will tell you, Carlotta is gorgeous. She's gorgeous on the outside, but her beauty on the inside will knock you over. And Carlotta, I've known you for a number of years. We don't need to go into the history of our relationship, but would you tell our audience just a little bit about you? Who are you? Where are you from? What do you do for a living? Stuff like that.
I was born and raised in Arizona, and youngest of five children. Both my parents college educated, all five of us kids college educated, went to law school. I've been practicing law for 17 or 18 years in a firm up in Tempe doing real estate and HOA law. I've been in Arizona my entire life with the exception of 3 years of University of Minnesota for law school.
Oh, my goodness.
I know, right?
My husband, I don't know if you know that. You might not know that I remarried, but my husband lived in Minnesota for 20 years. And so when he moved Minnesota and he moved from Minnesota and came down here, it was like literally swinging the thermostat to the other side. And, you know, I think he gets a little bit grumpy right now this time of year because of it. But Carlotta, you know, I had shared on a little intro coming into this, which when you hear all of this, you'll get to hear it, but a little bit of an intro just about what we're talking about today. But our country, particularly right now, but for a very long time, has been missing a mark, I guess, for lack of a better term. There has been systemic challenges with racism in our country. And I think the level of understanding those is quite broad. And as I shared with you before we got started, I have a sincerity to understand, and I know that I'm limited in literally understanding because of the color of my skin. But the basic bottom line heartfelt desire to understand is there. And I invited you today, and you've been so gracious to join me because I had also heard through our mutual friends that you have been willing to help others understand through Zoom meetings and interviews. And I just wanted to grab you and see if we could start those conversations here between yourself and myself. One of the things that you said that I listened to at the beginning of some of those other times that you were sharing with folks is that you said you wanted to speak from your heart. And my heart swelled when I heard you say that. Not that I would ever expect you not to speak from your heart, but it was that desire to hear someone speak from their heart and to begin there. So I'm going to let you launch off into this. Go ahead.
Just so you know, maybe I'm having some trouble with my internet. You froze up on me, so I missed
a little bit of what you said. Are we good right now?
Yeah, I'm good right
now. Okay, no, interrupt any time because that's, you know, I'm no big deal. Where I'm not, you know, presumptuous or anything like that. That there can't be little mistakes. But here's where I would like you to launch off from. I also heard you say, other than speaking from your heart, that there are a lot of distractions right now that are deflecting from what we really need to be focusing on. Can you let us know what you understand those distractions to be? I'm sure it might be different for everyone, but for a Black woman in America, and I'm sure the female part of it plays into it, but however you want to address that, what are some of the distractions that you're referring to when you say that?
Well, for starters, you've got your protesters that are protesting for, you know, legitimate reasons, trying to have their voices heard again, you know, for the issue of racism. And you've got rioters and looters who we've all come to know the majority of those individuals are not part of the peaceful protesters. And so a lot of times the news media is focusing on the riots, the looting, and the cameras getting turned away from the real peaceful protesters who truly have a message. That's one of them. I think people are getting wrapped up in terms. You have all these different terms flying around of white fragility, white privilege, you know, systemic racism, systematic racism, this, you know, there's just all these terms floating around, defunding. And when you listen to different people talk, it's clear that not everyone is using the terms the same way, first of all. So the message right there gets lost to some degree of what is this person using that term for? And what is their real message? But while you're trying to figure that out and figure out how they're using the term, again, a lot of times the real issue is what people are missing. And then that conversation's getting lost. Even the idea of Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter. That, again, is something that people are able to fight over and ignore what's really going on. So it's just all these silly little things that can cause division, that give people a chance to fight over these little things. It's like a husband and wife fighting over the toothpaste. and ignoring whatever the big issue is. That's what's happening here in a lot of levels.
You started to share, and I didn't listen to it all the way through on purpose because I wanted to have a fresh conversation, but you used an analogy, an example that a friend, I believe, at work shared as a way to explain systemic racism. I believe that's what you said. And it had to do with actually running a race, which I thought it was interesting, the play on words there a little bit. But would you share that example so that it was a baseline? It was like it rang so true to me. I thought it really can't get any more simple than that, not to reduce the power of it. It was just that simple and powerful.
Right. And I've actually heard it since then, even another way. But so the example I heard was if someone, you know, everyone's setting up to run a race and you let all the runners except for me start running for 10 minutes or for 200 meters, whatever it is, they get to go, I have to stay and wait. And then suddenly you go, okay, go ahead, Carlotta, start running. Well, everyone's 10 minutes ahead, and I might be fast, but I'm not that fast. And so if everyone keeps running at the same pace, I am never going to catch up to everyone who had a 10-minute head start. No matter how hard I run, no matter if I do my absolute best, I'm still never going to catch them. And so I may hit the same milestones that they hit or that they hit 10 minutes prior, but I'm still never going to be running the same race with them.
Will you set that down on top of what we're looking at in real life?
So you've got, you know, a lot of them talking about this idea of, you know, for so many years, Black America, we were slaves. And obviously we didn't have rights. We were treated, you know, horribly, like animals, whatever else. And then suddenly one day it was, okay, you're all free. Go live your life. And there's this expectation that that's all that needed to happen was people are just you're free. I mean, you see it in incarceration, this idea that people are let out of prison and they end up going back into prison because no one helps them to assimilate into society and they don't know what to do. I mean, 20 years behind bars, what do I do now? So it's that same idea that, great, you give people their freedom, but unless you help them with that 10 minutes that they're behind so that they can catch up, they're just always going to be running a different race than everybody else. And if those people, you know, it's not necessarily an expectation that the people 10 minutes ahead are supposed to just stop and wait for people to catch up. But it's that idea of everyone that is ahead recognizing that there's a lot of people 10 minutes behind. And there's, you know, yes, there are some that aren't even trying to run the race. But those that are, some of them have caught up and made up 3 or 5 minutes. Others are still 10 minutes behind and they need help getting ahead. They need help. They never learned the tools that they needed to really assimilate into society as Black Americans. I mean, a lot of people haven't had that opportunity, and it continues in, you've got all these different Black communities that, you know, it's kind of almost the blind leading the blind. They only have so many resources. There's, you know, the school, they don't have everything they need to learn and to get out of that, and not getting out from the standpoint I'm leaving everyone behind, but just getting out and being a part of our nation and being productive and acknowledged. And just, I mean, there's so many great people that haven't been able to realize what their worth is and what contributions they could have to our nation because they don't have the education they need. They haven't had the health care. They haven't had all these things. And so people think they're just being lazy or whatever else, but the reality is, like, they don't even know, some of them don't know what they're going to eat the next day. So what am I supposed to do to be helping and being what you consider a productive member of society when I'm just trying to provide for my family working 3 jobs? So that's you know, that's kind of a, maybe a broad stroke of what it's like to be 10 minutes behind everybody else.
And I love speaking in metaphor and analogy because it really does resonate with me. So I'm going to continue with that. So for those that are 10 minutes ahead, do you think that the continuing of the race that has those 10 minutes ahead, those of us 10 minutes ahead, knowing that there is a 10-minute delay, do you think that we grow accustomed to the fact that there is that delay and that it becomes something that we, I hate to say it, but that we live into almost?
Yeah, I think.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's accepted. Like, this is just the way it is. I definitely believe it's almost like the race needs to change. I mean, that's really, the people ahead have to acknowledge that they're ahead and that they've been given this opportunity and they've benefited. I mean, that's where the term white privilege comes in. This idea that there are people who have benefited, whether you planned on it or not, whether you, you know, think that you have taken advantage of it or not, it is just by being who you are, you've benefited from the overall feeling within the society. And so first it comes to people acknowledging that there is a real difference.
Acknowledging.
In the race. And then I think education and learning. I mean, that's where your heart is. You're truly wanting to know more. And I think there's a lot of people that share that sentiment like you do of, I want to understand now. I didn't know, or I knew, but I didn't really know what I could do about it. And now I want to understand and see where we go from here. So I think that's the start. And then I also think definitely working together. I mean, you've heard it a lot, like, you know, the Black community can't change what's going on in the white community. We can't make people change their attitudes, or, you know, like, we don't have, like, we're not the ones in power in certain areas, whether it be corporations, education, all this different stuff. We're not the ones that can make the big changes. Our voice is going to be heard, but we need others to be a part of this. And the only way I think that happens is, again, if people actually acknowledge and educate themselves. And then now everyone learns what the real problem is, and that's when you can start looking at what the solution is. If everyone's denying that there's a problem, then, like, why find a solution?
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's where it starts.
Let's just say that we're all on board to a certain degree in acknowledging it. And I had shared with you before we started, and I didn't say it while we were rolling, that that there has been this growing, I'll call it a curiosity. And it was before the tragedy of George Floyd. I had reached out to a friend of mine by the name of Chaz, and he will probably be a guest on, but I just said, listen, I know you're going to talk straight to me, but I've had this curiosity that I know I can't quite satisfy because of the color of my skin, but a curiosity has grown in me to understand. So not only do I acknowledge, like you noted earlier, I think that there are many of us who really want to understand, and then in understanding, know what can we do. And educating ourselves, I know right away that I'm going to be behind the eight ball. I think that there's a love understanding because I love people. I did have a family that I grew up with that are a black family, and their parents were like my parents, and there was this very much harmonious blending. And I won't say that color wasn't noticed, because that wasn't true, but that it just did not check any boxes in me necessarily. However, where I sit right now, that curiosity has grown to such a place that I know I need to address it and educate myself more so. How would I go about doing that in a way that you understand would be helpful to me from your perspective?
So, I mean, one of the things we've been sharing with people, and by we, I mean my family, just, you know, there's a lot of great documentaries out there that PBS has, and I think they're streaming, so you can just go on PBS, I think it's pbs.org, okay. And I say, I talk about PBS because when you're out searching for materials to help you understand, you do have to be careful what you're watching. If you come, you know, if you just Google something and you come across something, you're watching it, that it goes to that idea of like, who is the creator of the information that you're listening to and what place are they coming from?
Talk about that just a little bit before we go back into places to educate ourselves. What do you mean by that?
So what I mean is there's, you know, there's a lot of stuff out on social media of just various people, I guess I'd say sharing their heart, or, and, you know, some are going on rants, some are, you know, calm and maybe more educational. I mean, but there's all sorts of different views. And what I'm finding from a lot of my friends, when they, it's kind of like if they see a Black person saying it, it must be true. And they'll ask me, well, what about this view? Like what they're saying, like there is no systemic racism. So what's the problem? And that's where I say you have to, if you're going to watch a video and you're going to take it to heart, I would see who's saying it and I would go look at their background. Who do they align with? And I don't just mean politics, but just this idea of trying to discover where that person's coming from and why they're giving the message they're giving. And, you know, some people are just sharing from their heart and they're being legitimate. Some people, I think it is for political gain or it's for their careers or whatever. A lot of people have these underlying reasons why they're sharing what they're calling, you know, the gospel truth. And so that's why I caution people who is giving the message. Really look and see who's giving the message. And quite frankly, if you have a friend who is a person of color, then, you know, and you trust them, that should be your first source, not the internet. But going beyond social media, that's where I say just be careful what you're reading on social media. Going beyond social media, start looking at places that have more, that you can trust more. And so obviously we all know PBS, and I'm sure there's others as well that are known for education and things like that. And so they're not the news media. They're not, you know, they're not trying to be slanted one direction or the other. They're sharing documentaries that are telling us about our history, period.
And I think this is one of the things I also remember listening to you share before, history other than maybe what we got in school.
Absolutely. They're sharing American history. And I know a lot of people have been calling it Black history, and my mom pointed out, like, it's not Black history, it is American history. It's part of America's history. But it was absolutely part of the history that was left out. I certainly didn't learn a heck of a lot of things that, and in all honesty, I'm still learning about some things that just weren't taught and weren't just well disseminated, I guess. There are things you have to go out looking for information to truly get a true understanding of our history. And I'm sure all countries are like this, where they want to hide the bad part. They want to gloss over the ugly parts of your history and just highlight the good stuff. And we weren't any different. So you have to search for a lot of it. And that's where you have to find someplace who wants to educate people, and they're going to give you information in a way that is just facts, not spun with opinions and whatever else. And so that's what I would encourage people to find, legitimate sources to educate them about American history that has an emphasis on Black history.
And I think your sister mentioned a particular program on PBS that was about the Reconstruction after Civil War. Does that ring a bell? Is there a
series? She may have been talking about Eye on the Prize.
Eye on the Prize.
I think that might have been. I think that might have been.
Okay. And there, I know we have a mutual friend, Lisa, that said that their staff at church is going through a PBS program, and I don't recall that, but I will get some of that information, and I'll attach it to the end of this podcast so that I can inform people. You, when you speak of being in a race, and even no matter how fast you are and the ground that you may gain, you're still behind. Can you share personally from your experience, because you are quite accomplished, and how I would love for you to give us a little insight into that. I think that sometimes we can put blinders on for things that make us reason well. And we might reason well a situation by someone's status or someone's education and put blinders on still to the fact that racism has affected their lives and it is very real for them, as much so as for others. Can you give us some insight just to your journey?
Sure. And I can even maybe share like a little bit about my some examples for my family as well. Right off the bat, what comes to mind for my brother is a very well accomplished attorney in New York City, and he works for an international firm. He happens to be the first Black partner ever for that firm. And I know that firm's been around for a very long time. And like I said, it's international. I know they have offices in Switzerland and Hong Kong, and I mean, just everywhere. Yet he's the first Black man to become partner at that firm. So that right there speaks volumes of how, and trust me, it was not an easy journey for him to get there. And now that he's there, most people, once you make partner, you've arrived, everyone knows, oh, you're partner, you're all good. He finds himself having to continuously try to prove himself to other partners, clients, etc., just always having to prove himself daily, despite the fact that he, quote unquote, has already arrived where everyone's goal as a attorney is to be a partner at a big firm. So, that's been a journey that he continues to have, despite the fact that he graduated from Columbia University Law School. He was student body president of Arizona State University. And yet he still has to prove himself on a daily basis as a Black man. For me, I put myself through college. All five of us kids did, because my parents had five kids. So we put ourselves through college, put myself through law school. I've been practicing for 17, 18 years. I am very fortunate to be at a firm that recognizes my talents, and I haven't had, a bunch of bad experiences at that particular firm. I've worked at other firms where I know as an associate, there were white male associates with less experience than me, making more money than me. Despite having, what people would consider having successful in my career and just in life in general, I still, when I go shopping, I still have to, if I'm running to the grocery store, I don't worry as much. But if I'm going shopping to get clothing or anything like that, I to this day can't go to the mall just like no makeup, hair pulled back in a ponytail. I have to put on makeup. I have to dress nice. I have to put my best foot forward when I go to the mall so that anyone I encounter hopefully will help me and not make the assumption that I'm there to steal. Yeah. And I've certainly been, I've walked up to a makeup counter at a department store where someone has seen me and turned around and walked the other way because they don't want to help me. I have gone shopping where people are following me around as I'm browsing. And so it's that situation of where, even though I know, not being prideful or anything like that, but even though I can step into a store knowing that I probably make more money than everyone working there, I still sometimes get treated like I do not belong there. And my best example is kind of like Pretty Woman.
Yes.
When she walks in to go shopping and she's got so much cash, she could probably practically buy the store, and they don't want to wait on her. And that's the kind of bias that African-Americans deal with on a daily basis, of people just looking at your skin tone and making whatever negative assumptions they want to make about you, and not just thinking, you know, if I walk in with Lisa, our friend, we shop together, we walk into the same store, her shopping experience is usually different from mine, and not always. It's not that I don't have good experiences too, but it's always likely that we can go into the same store and her shopping experience is going to be different, because they assume that she belongs there and she's just there shopping. And a lot of people see me and they assume I'm up to no good and they have to keep an eye on me.
You know, it kind of takes my breath away to hear you say it, because I really am understanding. I don't get it like you do, and I can't. But the color, the tone of our skin immediately says something. How does that feel? Suffocating, that you can't, like, I am always hopeful for change. I'm always hopeful that love will win and that we can rewrite things. But at the same time, listening to you share, I get a little bit anxious for you, and truthfully for me, in my understanding, that we can't almost get away from it. Like, I don't know, like, how do you envision those knee-jerk subconscious reactions? For instance, let me just tell the story that I have a friend, and I don't know whether he'll air before you or after you, probably after you, but he shared, he's a theater person. He is a writer and a director for children's theater, but he shared about an earlier experience where he was going to dinner with a group of his Black friends in a car. He caught a ride with them. They got pulled over, and there were five of them in the car. There were five seats. Everything. There was no issue. I don't recall why they got pulled over. They got pulled over, and immediately the police officer scanned everyone in the vehicle and looked right at Alan, a white man, and said, "Are you okay?" So, I mean, that was in seconds of just looking at skin. And that, and I'm hearing it. So, like, when you use the example of you and Lisa shopping, that is another thing. This does not rank at all, so please, I don't want to offend or mislead, because I know I'm not getting it. But as you know, I've carried a lot of extra weight. But at a time when I carried the most weight, I remember shopping at Nordstrom's in their shoe department, and I would sit there. I'm getting choked up, not for myself, but as it's starting to connect a little bit, I would sit there and nobody would come over and address me because I didn't really belong. Now, mind you, I'm not connecting this to the challenge that people of color face. It's just resonating with me. And do you know what I did, Carlotta? When I got married in my first marriage, which many people know, Jim passed away. I had a big butt diamond ring from Jim. And I know that I made sure I flung my left hand around when I was talking and looking and picking up shoes, because I thought, if you're going to make a judgment on me of not belonging here, I'm going to at least let you know that I can afford to be here. Or I probably couldn't, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I know that's just not even a good example, but it's resonating with me. So in the frustration, how do you see that? And I might be putting you on the spot, because it's a huge, it's what our country's asking. It's what our world is asking. How will we achieve change when it's immediately what we see is color, and it's attached to years and years and years and years of challenges?
So first, let me say, and I actually was going to say this when we were talking earlier, that no, you haven't walked in the shoes of someone Black, but I absolutely was going to tell you that when you said, I absolutely can't understand any of this, you do understand on some level, because I know you've had challenges in your life because of your weight. And it's that same idea that it's something you couldn't hide that people saw, and they made immediate a judgment about you when they saw you. And that is a window into what anyone of another race goes through. Immediately someone sees them and makes whatever judgment call they want to. And so you do get it on some level, absolutely. So don't discount that understanding. And maybe that'll also help you to know, as painful as it might be to draw on some of those experiences might help you to understand what a lot of people have also gone through and are talking about right now. So you do get it more than a lot of other people.
Well, I thank you for affirming that, because it didn't really come to fruition or make a connection until I was just listening to you. And the shopping memory came to me. But I will say, I think that those of us out here, like myself, that there is a bit of a hesitancy for me to even speak to things, because I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to offend. My heart is so full. I know I don't get it. I don't want to come off ignorant. What would you say to those that the earnestness of wanting to see change, the earnestness of loving our brothers and sisters, no matter the color, and trying to level the playing field, but not knowing how, what would you say to us that are fearful of messing up with people of color?
So I'll answer that, your previous question along with this one, this idea of it's the heart. It's definitely the heart. So when we talk about people seeing somebody with their eyes and making what other judgments, you're going to make judgments based on where you are, where your heart is. And so for change to truly occur, change has to happen with each and every person's heart. Mm. We can't force that. But for people like you, whose heart is in the right place, and you really are seeking to learn and want change, it's first, I think, you know, it's almost like, you know, if someone loses a loved one, and you've lost a loved one too. So you and I have both lost loved ones. I've lost my father and my brother. You've lost a husband. I know what grief feels like. I know how painful it is to lose somebody suddenly. But I still don't know what your specific experience was, the pain that you experienced, and your grief process. And so it's fair for me to say, Terry, I understand how hard it is to lose a loved one. And basically, I stand with you and I support you in what you're going through. And just leave it at that. If I come and I say, well, I've lost, you know, this person in my life, and I know how hard it is, and this is what I've experienced, and me, trying to compare, you're going to sit there and look at me, and you're probably going to think, well, her heart's in the right place, and I know she means well, but she doesn't truly know what I've gone through.
Exactly.
And I think it's that same idea of,
yeah, what a great way to explain it.
So I think it's the same idea. You can let people know, like, I stand with you. I myself have experienced what, I mean, let's face it, whether it was as kids or whatever else, probably all of us have experienced something that we can remember of when we were treated differently because people perceived us as different. Whether we wore glasses, we had red hair, we, you know, braces, whatever it was. Kids are cruel, let's face it. And so as a child, at least, there's probably a chance that someone was teased for just being different in some way. So you can recall what it feels like to be treated different of just being who you are. So you can sympathize from that, or empathize from that standpoint with somebody else. And share even that, like, I cannot even begin to imagine what you go through on a daily basis or how you feel. I've had, you know, whatever small experience that I remember how bad I felt that moment. And I imagine that's, you feel similar to that or worse every day. I want to learn, I want to help, what can I do? I think just the sincerity of someone's heart really wanting to help, that's kind of where, I think that's where it starts. Just trying to empathize and let people know you care, as opposed to trying to be the voice for all Black people, or because I can't even do that, you know, because my experiences have been different than someone maybe in the inner city who still hasn't been able to achieve the goals that they want to. So I can't even speak for everybody because my experiences haven't been the same as what everyone's gone through. So I just encourage people, just first of all, check your heart, because for all of us, it's a time for us to really take inventory of where we're at, where we've been, where we want to go from here. And then once you do that own inventory, what's my part? My part is, I shared with a group of people I was talking to previously, it's different for every person. We all have different talents. We all have different gifts. I don't have a podcast. You have a podcast. You can use a podcast to challenge yourself, challenge others, get the word out of the changes that need to be made. Some people are writers, and so they could write poems, they could write songs. Other people dance, and they're doing interpretive dance. I mean, there's just, everyone has a different gift, and everyone needs to use that gift in such a way that it furthers this change that we so desperately need in America.
Before we go, because I really could sit and listen to you for hours, and hopefully you can come back, because I know that this isn't anything that's going to change overnight. I do feel the energy of change, even in my years of being on this planet, is vibrating more than I ever recall. What if you could wrap it up in, let's say, 3 points or more, whatever you want to share. It doesn't matter. What needs to happen in our country?
Well, I think racism needs to not be acceptable, first of all.
Acceptable.
Yes, because I do feel like it's become something that, like we had talked about earlier, like it's just something that it is what it is, and people just kind of live with it. And I think over, you know, it's even become more acceptable, because at one point it almost seems like people were starting to kind of go underground, and, you know, the hate's still there because you have the hearts that are bad that are still out there. And like I said, you can't, God can change hearts. People can't. We cannot change someone who hates. And so, but it wasn't as acceptable to hate, and it wasn't flaunted as much as it is now. So for starters, I want to see it not be flaunted anymore. I want that shift back where people are ashamed, like they know it's wrong. They know it's not acceptable. Their heart may hate because of people's races, but they're not going to flaunt it, because when they do, people are going to say no. Not here. That take that somewhere else. So, and I know that's starting to happen. I've heard scenarios. I even heard of a recent one where two guys showed up in their white hoods at a protest with protesters and counter protesters, and both sides said, no, that's not here. And which is just so interesting to hear, these people are against each other, and another group shows up, and that both groups are like, no, that's not okay. So I want to see that more, where not okay. I'd like to see people just be honest with themselves. You know, one of the first things people like to say is, I'm not racist. I have Black friends.
Right.
You know, let's really, really evaluate our heart and just be honest with yourself. And let's, if you're racist, if you've done things in the past that you shouldn't, if your views right now are not what they should be, you know, let God change your heart and just do better. Learn to do better. But this denial that so many, or defensiveness that people have of, no, 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 it's not me. I'm not part of the problem. Well, until all of us accept what role we've played in this, that's going to hinder change as well. So if you have a bunch of people running around in denial saying it's not my problem or I haven't done anything, then they're going to continue to be part of the problem.
Right.
You know, and I guess the other thing would just be, again, maybe people just need to get out and interact more with people of different races. And, you know, my mom will tell stories all the time. You know, for the longest time, she heard so many things in the Black community about whites, and she believed them all because, again, you're not having contact. And when you do have contact, it's very negative. She was not having any positive contact. And so, you know, my parents made the decision to move into a predominantly white neighborhood, which equaled, you know, in a predominantly Black or white church. And so it equaled our friends being, you know, all my friends were white. So, and they'd come over, my parents would accept them in the house, but my mom would share with me later in life how uncomfortable it was when my friends would call her mom. Because I'd go to my friend's house and call them mom and dad, and my friends would come to my house and do the same thing. None of us realized anything about it, but it used to make my mom very uncomfortable to have a white person calling her mom. And so it's one of those things of, but as she had more contact, more positive contact, it helped her views change. And she still has some issues because a lot of that is very deep rooted.
Exactly.
But because she had more contact with the white community, she then was able to understand them better and realize they're not all bad. And so it's that same idea of whatever prejudices each of us carries around with us, the more contact you have with the communities that you may harbor prejudice against, the more likely your prejudice are going to be obliterated, because you're going to realize all those preconceived notions you had are just wrong. And that, again, is education, but it's like education of, like, you're actually in it and you're experiencing reality and learning through interaction with people that are different than you.
So what I'm hearing you say, as you've shared beautifully, by the way, accepting that this is an issue within our own selves, whatever, taking a look at our heart, addressing change within our heart is really where it has to happen.
Yeah.
And then educating ourselves is a way to arm ourselves for change. And then being in relationship is a way to see the change lived out.
Correct.
Is that fair?
That's fair. Yeah.
Well, Carlotta, you've been just a blessing to me. So I'm going to trust that those that are listening, that they're feeling the same way. And I would love to have you back and have further conversation and just see as things unfold, you know, there's so much tension. And I don't know if you feel like I do, but I feel like even though that is not a good thing, it could be a good thing. Meaning,
agreed,
stuff's happening, kind of like, though I've not personally had children, but kind of like the labor pains, you know, that have women screaming for what's getting ready to be birthed. So
I agree.
I'm hopeful for that. So I would love for you to come back. I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for speaking so kindly and openly from your life and your heart, and we'll just keep this conversation going. But your guidance and your insight, I think, is so valuable and so applicable that we, no matter where we are on the scale, we can grab onto it and make use of it in our lives. I have no doubt. I want you to hang on for just a little bit. I'm going to end this Zoom meeting so I can give you a good personal goodbye, but thank you, Carlotta, and we will hear from you again. It's just been a joy.
Thank you for having me.
You bet, hon. Just a second.
Wow. That was just cool. That was so cool to spend some time with Carlotta, but one of the coolest things about it was the aha moment that I had, that connection, that peek in from an angle that I don't think I had ever considered before. And I think that understanding really comes to us from being listeners. And I want to definitely be a better listener. Our conversation continued after I stopped the recording, and Carlotta wanted me to make sure that we clarified something should there be any confusion about a parallel that she was drawing between the freeing of slaves and releasing criminals that had been incarcerated for a length of time. We just want to make sure, I want to make sure, Carlotta wants to make sure that we clarify that area, that although slaves clearly were not criminals, this is a parallel of systems that she was drawing. A parallel of systems failing the freed. And what a great example that was for me to grab onto for clarity and understanding. Also, I left with three pretty clear things in this quest to bring understanding and change to the systemic racism that we experience in our country. And one is to evaluate my heart. I want to always be in a place of evaluating my heart, to never be afraid to say that I'm wrong or that I'm ignorant or that I have been misunderstanding. Two, to educate myself. And in educating myself, I am arming myself to bring about change through the education of understanding where we have been, what has transpired, and what it is like right now. And then also to continue being in relationships with people of color. That is where change gets to live itself out. And I love that. I hope so much, no matter our color, that we can see one another through the eyes of our heart, and from there, learn to love each other better and just be better. Thank you so much for joining me on the Terry Summers podcast. What a joy it is to share this journey with you. Have a great day.